Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
At the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, you are going to be dealing with people just like the lady back there. She is still a member, maybe not in good standing, of the greatest force on this planet in the form of people. Don't forget that. This lady said she was white. You might say that don't mean nothing to you. You know that you are not telling the truth when you say that. She's a member of an organized force. Or she's at least associated with it, even though she's saying that she wants to get disassociated with it. But what did I say at the beginning of this talk? The white people who don't believe in racism are not among the smartest, which means that they won't know how to deal with it either. The lady has said, didn't you say that you came in here to try to reason?
Right.
Is that the reason?
Yeah.
You didn't exactly say that, but I helped you along.
Right.
I have to remember that.
Right.
Okay. But the best people to learn from are the people that you're running from. Because that's where the work has to be done. See, you might can solve your individual problem. And at some point, one way that you may do it is hook up with somebody non-white in a sexual way.
I'd like that.
You like that? I thought you would.
I mean,
according to the code, okay, be quiet, everybody be calm. According to counter-racist logic, if you plan on having sexual intercourse or engaging in any kind of sexual play with a non-white person anywhere on this planet during the existence of white supremacy, you are not running away from what it is you say you're trying to get away from. You have wholesalely, in the worst way, taken a person who is already a victim and victimized that person to the nth degree. There is no act that you can commit that's worse than that. The black person would be better off if you put a gun to their head and killed them, because at least that would send a message to the rest of them to stay alert. If you do this sexual thing, it will put the rest of them to sleep, and they will go further into the confusion. And that has been proven over and over and over and over and over again. So I'm duty-bound to tell you, hold it, this is science. I'm duty-bound to tell you this because this is true. Now, you may emotionally have this inclination. You have to kill it.
Well, I'm married to a white man, but I'm just saying, I find black men very attractive, too.
Yes, I can understand that. This happens all down through history. White men have it more than you, probably including the one that you have, if he ever went to NAM or someplace.
Yeah, he was.
He's got a long record. You say yes?
He was in Vietnam.
He was in Vietnam.
Right.
Oh, okay. Hoochie House. Okay, maybe.
Right.
I don't know. All right. But one thing that white men do everywhere they go is make sure that they run through the black females, and then after they finish with them, they dump them and turn them over to us. Okay?
But what can we do as white?
What can you do? That's the question. Excellent question. Best question in the house. You can go among the white people and start taking those hits that you're going to get. When you start talking the way that you talk and start saying you want them to settle this problem.
Unmuted.
The Cows, Context of White Supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, September 28th, 2016. So I have been told we will be here tomorrow. Workplace racism. Folks already wrote in some situations they would like to share. Same broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And we'll be here on Friday, 2 days from now. The third study session on Sam Greenlee's The Spook Who Sat by the Door. If you are a little late, a little bit behind, you can go in the archives and hear the first two audio segments. A great piece of fiction. Pretty rare that we do any works of fiction here for the book study, but this is one that I think has a lot of great information about white supremacy. Tune in Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Our broadcast today, one of our investors for the program, Be More, a longtime listener. Certainly last week there was a lot of commentary with the protesting going on in Charlotte, North Carolina. A lot of people were talking on social media about what was happening, their views on racism, white supremacy. Our guest for the evening, she was one of the folks who joined in and shared some of her thoughts on social media. Thought it would be interesting hearing from a white woman who not only classified herself as being pro-black, put that in quotes, also saying that just the way that things are going, she has a difficult time even associating with her own race. Presumably, I would think that would mean the white race. Thought it would be interesting to get some of her thoughts, to have her on the program this evening to exchange views on racism, white supremacy. Quickly, the audio clip you heard at the beginning, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., always a hoot to hear Mr. Fuller. You can support his work. You can get his counter-racist literature at producejustice.com, producejustice.com. Joining us live for the program this evening, our guest, Ms. Kelly Freeman. Ms. Freeman, are you with us?
I am.
Outstanding. Glad to have you on the broadcast this Wednesday evening. Looking forward to exchanging views. I'm sure the vast majority of our listening audience have never heard of you, no idea who you are. Anything that you would like to share just to give folks a quick idea of who you are?
I am a small town white female. I live in a very small town, majority white people. And my child, she's biracial, but I mean, I consider her black. So that's pretty much it. I mean, it's kind of crazy where I live. There was an incident that happened today at one of our colleges that just goes to show like how prevalent and distinguished racism is still to this day. And it's just, it's crazy to me. I can't even wrap it around my head. Like it's insane. So it's frustrating.
I think the incident you're talking about, if memory serves, was East Tennessee State, where they had protesters. Some black people were out protesting. I think some students, maybe some not students, were protesting about racism. They had Black Lives Matter signs. And it looked like some whites, suspected race soldiers, they came out in guerrilla masks and had bananas taunting the verbally taunting the protesters. I think there were quite a few news reports about that. Some of them on my Facebook feed, if folks follow. Most importantly, you said you are a white woman. You said you do have a child that you consider quote unquote biracial, even though you said you consider her to be black. Your daughter. Are you? Well, I guess if it's okay to ask, do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 29.
29. Okay.
Yes.
And you, is it okay for me to ask which state you're in?
Tennessee.
Tennessee. Okay. Tennessee, 29, white woman. Are you married?
No, I'm not.
Not married. Okay. But your child's father is non-white. Is that correct?
Correct. He is black.
He's black. Okay. Are you all still together or?
Not at the time. Not under some legal situations, but I mean, I still see him on a regular basis. I still speak to him. He speaks to his child. So that's that on that situation, but we are on good terms.
Okay. And you, do you have custody of your daughter?
I do.
Okay. Okay. And how
she
old is she?
Watching TV. She is seven.
Seven. Okay. Okay. Fascinating. I try to start every program that we have with my definition of racism. I use the term racism, the term white supremacy. I use those terms as synonyms. And I use the same definition for both terms. The definition I use is as follows. A global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists? Do you think that's an accurate definition?
Yes, I do.
Right on, precise. Love it, love it. Try to go through and ask questions. I think it's very important just anytime a non-white person has an opportunity to ask candid, straightforward questions of a white person. I think that that's very constructive, particularly if the white person is willing to be honest. I think that's a major part of the problem that frequently, I would say, whites not being honest about lots of things, particularly when the conversation is about racism, white supremacy. Question I've been trying to ask a lot of our white guests for some time now. There was a non-white author. He wrote an essay. It was about racism. He had a particular sentence in the article. The non-white author, he wrote, "White people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism, but rarely are they pained enough." And just the first portion of that sentence, you are a white woman, presumably you've been around white family members, other whites throughout your life, your 29 years on the planet. Do you, Ms. Freeman, do you think that this is true, that white people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism? In your experience, like a sizable portion of whites, are they often sincerely and greatly pained by racism?
The portion I know, yes, because I don't tolerate the bullcrap. But I do agree with that first portion, and along with the second portion, I do agree that we are not enough, because I've never had to go through that, what black people have had to live through. So I don't really know what it's like, but I know I've studied it in college, and I'm very intrigued, and I know that it's wrong, and it should have never happened, and I'm sincere with black people more than I am white, because I can only imagine being in that situation and not living in that, living through that time period that we are still, unfortunately, obviously, are going through.
Hmm. One important aspect of the question, this is not restricted to just the white people that you have in your circle. This is about whites in general. Your study of whites, regardless of whether you hang with them or not, do you think that there are a significant number of whites beyond your circle who are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism? Do you think that that's accurate and represents a sizable portion of the white population?
Probably not.
Okay. I think that's important. Just I've stated for more than a year now that I think that that statement is a gargantuan inaccuracy. And it goes back to what I said frequently when people talk about white supremacy, racism. We're saying things that are simply not true. You did say that you, though, Ms. Freeman, that you are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism. Is that correct?
I mean, yeah, it bothers me. Like, I'm just speaking, like, to speak about it even, like, with my friends, like, it like, makes my blood boil. It makes me have so many emotions when I talk about it. And I've never even had to go through it. But I can relate. Like, I can understand people's pain and why black people are so angry right now in the time that they are. And I'm with them on it all the way.
What do you do to demonstrate your sincere and great pain by racism?
I mean, I post on Facebook, and recently, it's been nothing but Black Lives Matter. I've attended protests. I mean, I try to do as much as I can. Me and a friend and I, we're going to make some T-shirts and pass them out to the community, you know, no charge, it's on us, whatever. Like, anything that I can do to get my voice out there. One person can't change the world, but more people, I'm not saying I'm the greatest person ever, and there's more people out here that relate to this situation as I. If we all came together, like, we could make a difference. It may not completely change, because you still have these crazy backwoods white people out here, white supremacists, like you say, but I mean we can make a difference, but enough people have to be willing and able to recognize that there is something wrong, and enough people have to stand up. And I don't think enough people are.
Do you,
especially white people?
Do you do anything economically in terms of financial support of either black individuals, black organizations? Do you do anything in terms of economics to demonstrate your sincere and great pain about racism?
I mean, I'm a single parent, so I really don't have financial to do that at this moment. But if I did, I would definitely give my money, of course.
One thing I do want to point out, and this is extremely important, when I use the term white supremacy, racism, and again, I use these terms as synonyms, I have pointed out for years on this program, it is a gargantuan error. It is about as bad as thinking that whites are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism. To minimize racism to quote-unquote backwoods whites, this system would not be in operation if worldwide and for centuries, if all of this was the product of a few backwoods, one-tooth, ignorant whites. That is not what is happening at all. And in my view, that is one of the gargantuan ways that whites practice racism, by restricting, minimizing our focus in terms of who we think of as racist. We don't think of a white mom with cookies. We don't think of a white man in a business suit with polished King's English. We don't think of them as racist. It just gets boiled down to Donald Trump and, you know, Jed and his wife out in the backwoods. And that is simply not accurate, should be resisted, called out at all times. Do you, Ms. Freeman, have you ever had a problem being not completely honest when talking, speaking with any other non-white people, particularly about racism, white supremacy? And when I say not being honest, I mean withholding pertinent information, not being as accurate as possible when you are speaking with another non-white person. Has it ever been a problem, you being dishonest when speaking with non-white people?
No, because I try to be as honest as I possibly can be. Took a lot of classes in college, and it was both, you know, black and white students, and we spoke a lot on racism, and I never had an issue with anyone. We all, you know, were open and minded enough to agree, so pretty much on a lot of the subjects that we discussed. So I mean I've never had an issue with anyone that I've spoken to it about, so no.
Do you think it's logical for any non-white person, or do you think it's logical for non-white people to be suspicious of anyone classified as white, to suspect that they could be racist under the system of racism, white supremacy? Do you think that's logical?
Okay, repeat your question.
Yes, ma'am. Do you think it's logical for non-white people to suspect any white person, anyone who is classified as white, to suspect them of being a racist as long as we're under a system of racism, white supremacy? Is that logical?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Even you, do you think it's logical for non-white people to even be suspicious of you, Kelly Freeman?
Absolutely.
Okay. You have mentioned twice already that you studied this subject matter in college. What specifically were you studying? Like, can you tell us some of the books that you read, or if you were having white professors, non-white professors talking about racism?
There's no particular class. I studied a lot about the criminal justice system and how African-Americans were treated within the criminal justice system. So that's where pretty much the topic of racism came in at. And my professor, I've had a white lady and a white gentleman as my two professors for those classes. So,
did you all
have, and all mixed races.
Did you all have like different books that you read, or did you have a reader, or did you do articles?
Just talked about maybe like Ferguson went on in that time at that time period. So we did a lot of discussion on Ferguson and just, you know, topics of the criminal justice system and how, you know, African Americans are overrepresented in that type of situation. But it was no book strictly on racism.
I see. Okay. What point did you realize that you are white in a racial context? At what point did you realize that and what that means to be classified as white?
I mean, I'm white. I recognize people's skin color as black and white, but I'm just as human as anyone else. So I don't see a difference between black and white people, if that makes sense.
Just your response so far, it does not make logical sense, because we agree that there is a system of racism, white supremacy, so you know that there is just huge difference in terms of being classified as white, like you are, and being classified as non-white. There is a difference in terms of how you're going to be treated worldwide based on those classifications. So the question was, at what point did you realize that you, Kelly Freeman, are white, and the implications, the racial implications of that classification?
I mean, it's been obvious within the criminal justice system for a long time. And now, even with technology, it's become more evident that white people are treated way better than black people, and it's unfair. So that right there in itself, to me.
Did your parents talk about racism or anything when you were growing up? Did your parents talk about other black people or their concerns about white people?
No. My parents have always taught me to treat everybody the same. I grew up in an urban community, so I've been around black people my whole life. My parents never once talked negatively about a black person or anything like that when I was growing up, so... Always to treat everybody the same.
You grew up in Tennessee?
Yes.
What was the racial demographics of the area where you grew up?
Oh, it's majority white people. I wouldn't say very urban, but, I grew up in not all the way black neighborhood, but, you know, it's a lot more white people here. But, I mean, I've been around many races ever since I was a young child, so I see everyone as a human race, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of percentage, was it like 60% white, 70%?
I would say about 60%. Yeah, I would say even now it's about 60% white.
60% white, okay. And you said your parents, they didn't make any comments about race growing up. You didn't hear, you know, them talk about black people or talk about concerns that they had about whites or anything like that growing up?
No. Not that I recall.
Did you hear any racist jokes growing up from any white people in your family, classmates?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to an all-white high school. There was like a total of two black people there. And I mean, I was friends with the black people. Like I said, I'm going to treat everybody the same. And there were people always making comments, you know, to those people. And I was always... I defended those people, so I don't know what else I was supposed to do.
What, if you can remember, like, the specifics, because I've, you know, emphasized that just deconstructing the terms that are used in these racist jokes and what have you, that that's very important. What were some of the things that were said to these two black students at your high school, if you can remember the details?
I mean, the only, I mean, they would just say the, call them the N-word. I mean, just straight out. And I mean, I don't tolerate that. So I had to act out on that part. I don't, I don't tolerate that. So.
And you said you were friends with these two black students at your high school?
Absolutely.
Okay. That does seem to kind of conflict with what you said about your town, you know, having a significant portion of non-white people. If there are only two black students at the high school, that would strike me as it being like way more than 60% white if the high school.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about like in, I live like 20 minutes outside of Johnson City in a small community called Gray. I now live in Johnson City, and that's where, you know, this is a city, and out where I live was like, you know, I mean, I guess rural areas. So, I mean, I live probably 300 people were in my senior class. So it was very small. So, but a lot of the black, you know, black kids went to Science Hill and, you know, stuff like that. So from my high school, the percentage there in that smaller community is even and smaller than, you know, the 40% black that were in Johnson City.
So let's try it again. So the area specifically where you grew up in Gray, I think you said, what were the percentage of whites in that area?
I would say like 70%, 75%.
Okay. That it would sound like it would have to be real high for it to be two black students at the high school. What was the response from some of your other white classmates when you said you would go in to defend these two black students when they were being called nigger? What was the response from some of your white classmates?
I mean, I don't hang out with people that tolerate that. I mean, if you tolerate that, then to me, you're just racist in itself. So I don't hang out with people like that. But, you know, people didn't like it when I took up for them, of course, because I'm a white girl taking up for a black guy, you know. But I didn't care. I mean, I voiced my opinion on, you know, things like that. I don't tolerate it. It doesn't matter who you are to me. I don't like that word. So, and there was an instance on Facebook the other day. Someone had posted that, and I just don't deal with it. I don't tolerate that.
And the person who wrote this on your Facebook page, I saw the post that you're referencing, Michael Evans. Was he someone that you know, like, personally? Like, not just someone?
I know the mother of his child. I know her.
Okay. So you all were friends on Facebook. Was he posting this? He was commenting about the niggers, I think, protesting in Charlotte.
Well, yeah, he said that they were that's what they were acting like. But, I mean, you don't, that's not a terminology, you don't use that as an adjective. That's not something that you use. So first of all, his comment was stupid in itself because he didn't know what he was talking about. And to use that language, especially in this time, is retarded to me. I can't even, I don't know. Makes me mad.
You said that, talking about Mr. Evans and him calling the protesters in Charlotte niggers and, you know, the way that they were responding to the death of Keith Lamont Scott, on Facebook, you said that his commentary was uneducated and pure ignorance. What do you mean by that specifically when you say he's ignorant and uneducated?
Because that's not something that, first of all, in the context that he used it, it wasn't even correct, like literally correct. So, and who was he to say they're acting like anybody? Because first of all, he's not black and he's not being shot by the police. So he has nothing to worry about. And he doesn't, obviously, if you don't recognize that there's a problem, even if you are white, then you are a part of the problem. Like, this is serious stuff that's happening out here. And if you're just going to make silly comments like that on social media, I don't have nothing to do or say to you. Like, I don't have nothing for you.
I just want to hear your thoughts. The logic that I use when any individual classified as white, when they are practicing racism, and in my view, Michael Evans, his commentary on the what was happening in Charlotte last week, that is the activity, the conduct of a racist. So a white person practicing racism, in my view, that is not ignorance. I think a lot of times people, and I, you said it quite a few times already in the broadcast, classifying it as crazy, stupid, retarded. In my view, that's not the most accurate way to describe what's happening. If people are doing exactly what they want to do, and that is abusing, mistreating people that they classify as not white, that's not crazy. We can say that it is unjust. We can say that it is
absolutely.
It is reprehensible behavior, but in my view, that is not crazy. To me, it's kind of this. It's part of the same way of minimizing and just classifying racists as these are dumb people. These are just backwoods people. They're just stupid. They're ignorant. When in my view, to dominate and to have a global system functioning for centuries, where you dominate the entire planet of non-white people, that takes a lot of intelligence. You are not just dumb, bumbling idiots to pull this off. And I think that's one of the ways that consistently whites encourage us to think about this problem. What would your response to that be?
I agree. I mean, I think it's on a much larger scale than even being crazy. I feel like it's unjust, and it's on a much larger scale than what I'm even speaking of. So I recognize that the issue is much larger than, once again, these what I call crazy people. It goes way beyond that. So,
Our guest, Tennessean Kelly Freeman, when you, I guess, had your daughter, who is now 7, who you said you classify as black, she, I guess, phenotypically, for folks that, you know, are not on your Facebook page, they don't know who you are, just so we have an idea, like, in comparison to people that we would know, like President Obama, Halle Berry, like, is your daughter, in terms of the amount of melanin in her skin, is she lighter than President Obama, darker than President Obama? Like, if we were to see her,
I would say she's about his President Obama's color.
By President, okay, okay. So yeah. when people see her, there's no way that she could, as they say, pass for being white. Do you think she could? If she,
oh, absolutely not.
Absolutely,
yeah,
not. Okay,
no.
Okay. So when you had your daughter, how did your family, friends, how did they respond to you having a child with a black male?
No issue. Once again, I never once had a problem out of that at all. My parents were very accepting of the fact that they were having a biracial child. I had no issues.
And his family, how did they respond to him having a child with a...
They were just fine. They love me to this day. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. You have contact, I guess, with his, I don't know, parents? Or
oh, something? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And did any of them, did they suspect you of being a racist at any time?
No.
Wow. Wow. I do want to point out, we were in agreement earlier, it would have been logical for them to suspect you of being a racist because you are white and we are in a system of racism. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they don't. They know me. Other people don't.
That's, I mean, but did at any point, even when they didn't know you, so when they first met you, was there any suspicion about...
They may have, but they never voiced it to me. I mean, if they did, they never said, oh, I suspect you're a racist.
Oh. Standard, pretty standard, unfortunately. You posted about the new flick that's coming out. I'm not sure the date. It's coming out sometime soon. About the Loving story, Richard
sure.
and Mildred Loving. That was the case. It went all the way to the Supreme Court where they struck down. This is in the 1960s where they struck down some of the laws about what they call interracial relationships. I assume you at least know about the film or what happened with the Loving couple. What are your thoughts on this bit of history and the film coming out?
I think it's sad. Very sad. I've just seen the preview so far. I haven't seen the movie, but based off what I've seen, it's sad and horrible to me. And
what's that?
Unjust.
What's sad and horrible about it?
I don't feel like they should have, first of all, taken their child away and removed them from their home. And there was an issue with the white man marrying a black woman. Like, I don't, that's what I have a problem with.
I see. Were you aware of the age difference between the two at the time that they got married? Mildred, that's the black female in this case, she was 17. Richard, that's the white man in the case, he was 23, 6-year age difference, and they met this, quote, romance started when Mildred was 11 and Richard was 17. Were you aware of that?
No.
Okay. I hope... if they're going to be accurate in telling this story, I hope that that will come out. Folks can check, you can verify, you know, what I said about the age difference. Is that significant to you, the 6-year age difference between the two? Again, they got married when the female was 17 and the white male was 23?
No, I don't see an issue with that at all.
No issue with that at all. I know in Washington State, just for our listeners, that would be statutory rape right now, 2016. If you are 17, you cannot be engaged.
Okay, but we're talking about when was this movie filmed?
Well, the movie was filmed.
What? When did this actually happen? What year?
This is like 1964,
mid-1960s. So then it probably wasn't classified as statutory rape.
I'm not sure, but I would be willing to bet you quite a bit of money that anywhere in the world in 1964 or 2064, white people would have a significantly different interpretation of a 17-year-old white woman being in some sort of sexual arrangement with a 23-year-old black male. Do you think that's true or false?
True.
Why do you think that is?
Times have changed.
I'm not understanding.
I'm about to hang up.
I'm sorry? I didn't understand your response. So the question I asked was, do you think it's true that whites would have a substantially different interpretation of a 23-year-old black male in a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old white woman? I said, do you think they would have a different interpretation? And I thought you said, yes, that's true. There would be a different interpretation.
Correct.
Okay, and I asked, why? Why would there be a difference?
In 1964, I mean, people were getting married that young. But at the same time, they weren't being married by within different races. Black people weren't marrying white people at that time frame. So as far as age, I think it's true. I don't see a problem with the age.
I didn't ask if you saw a problem with the age. My question was about, number one, I thought from your answer, we were in agreement white people would view a 23-year-old black male being in a sexual arrangement with a 17-year-old white woman, they would not view that the same as the way that they view the loving couple. We agreed on that. Your response in terms of why there would be a difference in perception around that, to me, it doesn't even seem like it's answering the question at all. I'm at a loss almost. I guess just getting with the sexual aspect, since you had a child with a black male, do you think white people I think she hung up. I wanted to make sure I got to the sexual question, but I think Ms. Freeman hung up on us. I'm going to see if we can dial her back. I thought she was sincerely and greatly pained about racism. Surely you can entertain more than 30 minutes of questions where you can talk about a flick. We're not even asking anything crazy for you to donate funds or anything. I heard her say before that she was about to hang up. I heard her say that. Let's see.
You have reached the voicemail box of 423-943-0570.
Greetings, Ms. Freeman. We were talking. You got disconnected. I hope you didn't hang up on us. I thought you were sincerely and greatly pained by racism and willing to have honest conversation about racism. I hope you didn't hang up on us. I thought we had a sincerely, greatly pained white woman who was willing to talk about racism. Right on. I'll make an effort to give her a ring back in a few minutes or so. At any rate, the only reason I wanted to do the broadcast again, as I said, Bemore, she posted the comment from this white woman. And I've seen this before. If anyone remembers when we had Crystal Tyler on the program, certainly Timothy Wise, and there are quite a few, there are legions of these whites who will go out and jump in line and do the Black Lives Matter. They'll get it tattooed on their arm and post away on social media, and they'll write, 10,000 word, 20,000 word essays and what have you, and get them published on the Huffington Post. And unfortunately, a lot of us victims think that these are just the greatest whites in the world for being willing to come out and talk about this. And, oh, yeah, it's really sad how you all are treated. And, you know, I deleted about five racists who were my pals on Facebook. I deleted them, you know, because they were calling niggers niggers. And, you know, I just don't tolerate that, you know, from these retarded white folks. You just can't get down. And they just think that these are the Michael Rapaport. They just think that these are the greatest whites in the world. And I really think that a substantial means of us making progress, just getting a much better understanding of what it means to be white. She, within the very conversation where she consistently is describing, characterizing whites who practice racism as ignorant, stupid, retarded, where she acknowledges, oh yeah, it's much broader than what I'm saying, where you're not being honest, where she's saying it's much broader, it's much deeper than what I'm saying, absolutely, it's not just crazy, oh yeah, I understand that, I've taken classes on this in the criminal justice system, oh yeah. The whole piece where she hung up with the Loving situation, I think that that's really important. I have to give credit again. The person that I first heard make an issue of the age difference, the legend, W. Kamau Bell, when he was on the visit the first time he was on the program, only time, way back in 2010. But I think he was doing it in a part of his comedy routine. And even W. Kamau Bell, who is married to a white woman, even he acknowledged that is way incorrect, and white people would have a drastically different reading of this event if it was a 23-year-old black male with a 17-year-old white woman. And I wouldn't care what the time frame is, if it was 1864, 1964, 2064, whites would not be glorified. Oh, this is wonderful. This is the greatest thing ever. This is progress. Woo, we need to make 8,000 films. And they just did a film about the Loving situation. They did a documentary within the last, I think, two, three years. I tried to contact the filmmakers to have them as guests on the program, because that was going to be one of the same questions that I asked them about the age difference. And again, they started this, you know, little tacky arrangement started when the black female, Mildred, when she was 11, and the black male, the white male, Richard, was 17. I just cannot imagine. I mean, even you could put the race thing to the side for a moment. Anybody out there that's a parent, I'm not a parent. Make sure I'm not a parent. Anyone out there, if you are a parent, can you imagine your 11-year-old daughter? Oh, yes, I'm dating. This is my sweetheart. He's 17. Can you imagine in any context, even if you have a black child, and this is a, let's say you have a black daughter that's 11 and her sweetheart is a 17-year-old black male. Can you imagine like any circumstances where, yeah, cool in the gang. That's great. Love is awesome. Wonderful thing. Even if you're the parent of the 17-year-old, are you serious? Are you kidding me? Come on. And I said that I explained this to a listener. In my view, it is a part of the racist strategy. They promote these tragic, tacky arrangements, especially these types, when it is beneficial to them. And invariably, it is something really exploitative. Just, I mean, if you look at it at all, even the situation with Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, it's the same thing. He was way older than her. This is child rape. This is not some, you know, wonderful plantation romance. They do this sort of thing consistently when they promote these ideas and say, oh, yeah, this is progress. This is working towards solving the problem. Pay attention for that sort of language and see how often, because I suspect that Loving film, whenever it's coming out within the next, it's coming out right at the same time as Nate Parker's project. If it comes up, particularly if we have anybody, if you're in a college class, we're supposed to be having intellectual dialogue about all of this. See, or you can ask yourself, you know, what about the age difference between the two? What do we make of that? Would it be a difference if it was a 17-year-old white female, 23-year-old black male? Would it be a difference on how we assess this and just see what they say? Anywho, wish we had got to, I wish, because I certainly had more questions I was for sure going to ask about the dynamics of sexual intercourse between whites and non-whites. I was going to get to that. Also, she had posted several times about Colin Kaepernick and him not standing for the flag, and she supported him and all that. From her posts, I'm not, you know, 100% sure, but just from what she posted online, it seemed that she was at the Tennessee Volunteer University of Tennessee's football game this past weekend against Florida. That was a big game on national television and all that. I was going to ask her if she stood for the national anthem, because she was on and saying that online she was saying that she supported Colin Kaepernick and him not standing and blah, 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 and bringing attention to Black Lives Matter. And she was saying with everything that had happened, she almost was not going to stand for the anthem as well. So I wanted to see if she followed through on that, or if this is just, you know, gibberish on social media. In addition, I had some other questions as well. She had a post, a white person, if folks remember, they had the flooding in Louisiana just within, I think, the last month, right, from the storm. This was in like the Baton Rouge area. It was a white person who posted, and I guess it was some white person who had a boat, and he rescued some black people, apparently, in Louisiana. And so his post read, "Most white people know and believe that Black Lives Matter. We don't need a racist organization like Black Lives Matter telling us they do. This picture is of a white man saving a black family in Louisiana," right? That's what he wrote. Ms. Freeman responded, because people were saying, hey, this sounds kind of racist, the way that this is written, the way that he's criticizing Black Lives Matter and even calling them a racist organization. This sounds like, you know, just some racist white supremacist. Ms. Freeman responded by saying, I don't think this person typed it how they meant to say it. I was going to ask her, how did she think this person meant to express himself? I think it was a male. How did she think the person meant to articulate, you know, whatever it is that they wanted to say, as opposed to calling Black Lives Matter a racist organization, which I think they were pretty blunt, explicit, unambiguous in doing. If folks have any thoughts, commentary they would like to share, what they heard from Ms. Kelly Freeman, feel free to share. I always think it is grand to start with that clip with Mr. Fuller having the exchange with the white woman. Number one, it's just, it's not very often that I hear black people talking to whites and just asking questions. You don't have to jump up and down and call them names. I actually think it's better if you are calm, businesslike, and just asking questions and having appropriate suspicion, really having an understanding of what it means to be classified as white, and then asking appropriate questions, suspecting that I'm talking to a race soldier. And these are questions that I would like to ask, see if they will give us honest commentary. I just don't hear that done often enough. I really appreciated the exchange Mr. Fuller had with the White Women's Summit. That's from years ago. I'm really appreciative, appreciate that he was able to have that exchange. I hope we have had constructive exchanges with whites over the years here on the program, and offered an opportunity for folks to call in to get their questions to whites on the program, so that we can all get better questioning, interrogating race soldiers. But I think that's important, and consistently I just don't see, it'll be whites like Kelly Freeman that, you know, they get their honorary black card, as was mentioned Monday on the program when we had Marcus Rediker, where, you know, this is an A-OK white person. This person is cool in the gang. They were out protesting, or they were part of Occupy Wall Street, or they read Dr. Nell Irvin Painter's The History of Whites, or, you know, they read Mumia Abu-Jamal, or they know who he is, or they protested to try to get him out of greater confinement, or they went all the way down to Texas to protest against Sandra Bland. It's very, very easy for racists to do any of those things, and I would just state the passage that I read from Marcus Rediker's book, and I asked him at the end of that broadcast about the significance, the importance of having black people think that there are some good whites. That is extremely important. Racists, and particularly the more knowledgeable, the more refined racists, they understand the value of having non-white people, black people in particular, I would say, think, hope, understand, look, search for a white, a handful of whites that are not racist, like Kelly Freedman, for whatever reason. They had a child with a non-white person or whatever. That this is a good white person, there have to be more, or there potentially can be more if we just get them the right literature, if we get them to the white privilege conference, if we have sex with them, whatever they think it will take. There are some good, not racist whites, and there can potentially be many more. They understand that that is a huge value, that once you start having a significant number of non-white people who think, if you are white, you are a racist. That is what it means to be classified as white, and my behavior, my thought, speech, actions, and emotions will reflect that at all times in all areas of people activity. Once you have a substantial number of non-white people who think in that manner and conduct themselves in that manner, in my view, that will have a hugely significant impact on the system of racism. Where Kelly Freedman does not have sexual access to black males, non-white children, she is thought of accurately as a white supremacist, racist, and we will deal with her as such. Once that begins to happen, we'll be making some progress to solving this problem. Folks have any commentary they would like to share, the number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Let's see, anyone dialed in, anything they would like to share? I'm trying to be decisive. I'll open up the first three people that called in, and then I'll just go down the line in the order people dialed in and get the rest. So the first three people that dialed in with a hand up, do you all have any commentary from what you heard from Kelly Freedman?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus. Another wonderful but wonderfully short program speaking to this terrorist. I didn't think she was going to stay on the program the whole show. I had a feeling she was going to hang up. She did what white people always do, in my opinion, in regards to, like you said, obfuscating reality with her discussion about the minimalistic things that she personally does to help combat racism, posting on Facebook, making up little nonsensical BS t-shirts that she's going to hand out for free in the community, and all this nonsense. And I totally agree with you that one of the greatest things that white people have done is to fool us. And they fool us in the sense that they have trained us to look at them in a way in which we separate them. So in other words, like you said, we're always looking for that good white person, that Jesus character or characters that we think will somehow protect us from their more overtly terroristic cohorts. And the thing is that while they're teaching us to go sifting through all of the so-called white people that are racist to look for the so-called non-racist whites, they look at us the way that you said. Every black person is a criminal. Every black person is a rapist or a drug dealer. Every black person is life unworthy of life. And that is where they, I think they have a serious, serious edge on the way that we're conditioned in that sense, that that they look at us holistically as one thing, and that's what we see in all 10 areas of people activity, whereas they have trained us to look at them as individuals. And that is something that I've heard from numerous Black people, and it's one of the most nauseating things I've ever heard, but that is something that I think that we really, really, really have to work through. And the fact, and you bringing up the loving story is interesting, because when I went to Egypt in 2007 with my family, we had one of Mildred Loving's relatives on the trip with us. She's a school teacher in the Bronx, and we ended up having a discussion about that story. And sadly, she thought there was something wonderful about this rapist 17-year-old, because I'm pretty sure, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I'm probably almost 100% sure that his 17-year-old raging bleached fecal matter hormones were raging, and he was definitely having sex with that 11-year-old child. So I thought that she, at that time, back in 2007, I thought she was out of her mind to even view that relationship as anything constructive whatsoever, but she did. And I just was kind of fascinated with her whole perception of the rape of her ancestor as being something positive, or something positive coming of that, in the sense that she had the ideology herself that somehow sleeping with white people would stop or end racism in some way, shape, or form. So, yeah, I think this movie is going to add more confusion. I think it's also going to give people the false impression that we're making headway because there's more and more so-called interracial relationships, when if you check the statistics, it's less than half of 1% of white people marry Black people. So what they put on TV and in the media is completely opposite to what the reality is. And I think this movie is going to bolster that false reality. Thank you. And I'll mute my line. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening to you, Gus. Good evening, Roz. I heard her allude that I'm hanging out. And then she hung up. it was odd that she hung up on that point, though. I think she had already figured out from the beginning that, this person isn't confused. I'm not going to be able to confuse this person, and it's not even worth a try. She wasn't that refined. First, I was going to say, you know, I view white people and Black people, that white person is, when they're in a relationship, that white person to me is automatically a racist. It's no suspect. Now, to me, it's a step further, and this could only be with white women. And this is what my question was going to be, but I was going to add a little context first, but, you know, would it be logical for a Black person to view a white woman who brings in a Black child knowing how white people will mistreat that Black child as a racist? Because, I mean, to me, that's even a larger act of racism than the actual relationship. I mean, that's like, you know, you're bringing in a child that you know from firsthand experience. I mean, you went to school. And she lied about that. She said, I grew up in a racially diverse urban area, and then, he went to, it wasn't that urban, and the school only had two Blacks, so, I mean, it's one way or the other. So I just think that she was a very, you know, I mean, no hands-down racist on the relationship. And the child, I was also going to ask about the legal situation with the child's father, because I would guarantee that it was going to come out that she put him in that situation. And, you know, I just think that she was on practicing on racism. As for the loving story, I mean, if my 11-year-old was having sex with a 17-year-old, you know, I don't even think I would go to the police. You know, I think I'll do that myself. That would be definite rape. And for a 17-year-old and a 23-year-old, I mean, I know people who go into jail for being 18, messing with a 16-year-old. I mean, so it's people, this is just, I mean, what was it that would make her hang up on that? Other than the fact that this story to her represented, you know, some type of, I guess, some type of qualification to her relationship with black men. But so you're holding on to that story rather than just admitting that that's disgusting. And I was going to ask her, if your 11-year-old daughter, your daughter who's 7, when she's 11, and she's messing with a 17-year-old man or having sex or intercourse or dating a 17-year-old man of any race, would that be appropriate? And I guarantee she would have said no. So, you know, just wish she didn't hang up, and I'll meet my line. Thank you, Gus. Very good show. And I haven't met one yet. Here's another one.
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I guess I caught the most key aspect of the interview. And but what comes to my mind from a logical standpoint is that white people who say that they are who this white female and others like say, they should be white people should be the kindest, most courteous people in the world. I mean, just constantly, when they are in contact with us, and for the most part, they shouldn't even be in contact with us at all, let alone talking about saying things to us other than things like this interview, which is designed for them to give us valuable information. And being honest is paramount. But to be discourteous, which is what I observe, and also from a standpoint of hanging up without explaining on why, it's just like obvious telltale sign of this person being exposed as who she is a white person who is practicing racism and white supremacy, who make the option to do so. And it's not uncommon. It's something that is classic for the most part. They're not willing to give us honest information for the most part, especially the white person who has the strategy that this white female has. And from the standpoint of an 11-year-old being in a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old is rape. And like you said, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter if it's a white person or a non-white person. And for her to okay it, that was a moment of practicing racism, white supremacy. So it's, you know, not surprising at all. And I'm for it every time, you know, to expose white people. That's something that's very important because they shouldn't, for the most part, they shouldn't even be in our presence at all unless they are willing to be honest. So, of course, the most times when you are in contact with a white person, we're not going to see any honesty, very little honesty at all, let alone talking about being surprised about them hanging up the phone, which I don't think nobody is surprised about them hanging up the phone. But, yeah, that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Before I get to some of the other folks who dialed in, the incident that she mentioned at East Tennessee State that happened today, it is on my Facebook page. Folks posted it just to give details. A peaceful protest on East Tennessee State University's campus Wednesday afternoon was disrupted when a man wearing a gorilla mask showed up and started handing out bananas to students holding Black Lives Matter signs. According to ETSU spokesman Joe Smith, students were on campus holding a peaceful demonstration when the man approached them and started handing out bananas. An ETSU Department of Public Safety report said officers responded to a disorderly conduct call at Borchuk Plaza, where a Black Lives Matter event was taking place. According to the report, when police arrived, they saw a man later identified as Tristan Redke wearing blue jean overalls, a white t-shirt, and a black gorilla mask. Police said Redke had a rope and bananas, which he was holding out to the students that were protesting. Redke was then identified, detained, and taken to the public safety office. According to the report, Redke said a couple of days ago he saw on Yik Yak, a social media site, that a Black Lives Matter event was happening in the free speech area of Borchuk Plaza. Redke told police he then went to the store Tuesday, where he bought a rope to tie a bunch of bananas to and also purchased a gorilla mask. According to the report, Redke said he wore the gorilla mask and had a bunch of bananas hanging on a rope, was carrying a burlap sack with a rebel flag with a marijuana leaf on it to provoke Black Lives Matter protesters. Redke was charged with civil rights intimidation after discussion by public safety officers. Redke was charged with civil rights intimidation after discussion by public safety supervisors, campus administration, and the district attorney general's office. Redke was arrested and taken to Washington County Detention Center. And they have his mugshot and some video of him out harassing black students and or protesters, in case some of them are not students. Other folks who had commentary, your line should be open, or at least the next three folks. The caller at 353-5539, the caller at 6731, and Ken Steele. You three should be with us as well.
Can I be heard?
Hi, B. Moore.
Hey. Peace, Gus, and all the other listeners, great show. I also didn't expect her to stay the entire show, just from the little bit that I've seen myself and just the little bit I know about her. I just wanted to, make it clear how the percentage of the hometown that, or my hometown, is about 90% white. So she didn't, 60% was not anywhere close. It's about 90% white, and for her to say she's from an urban area, I mean, it's 90% white, so there you go. And that's it. Thank you so much for having the show.
For sure, for sure. Interestingly, I have been to this area of Tennessee, and it's, like, ultra white. This is, like, the eastern part of Tennessee that's kind of close to the western part of Virginia. But it's very rural and very white. It's not that. I think this is, like, 90 minutes from Knoxville. About university.
It is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is. Exactly.
There you go. These are the people that loved Peyton Manning, and then T. Martin came quarterback and they won a national championship, and he didn't get the same type of treatment that Peyton Manning got. No surprise there. other folks who just joined us who had commentary.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, greeting the host and all the listeners. It's Carla from North Florida. Just a very brief comment. You asked her about her child's parent, her child's father, and she said something that made me think of some type of legal thing being involved, and I must say that I immediately thought of the interview with Crystal Tyler, and that's pretty much it.
The wheat money reminded her two visits back in 2000, and the same thing. That's why I mentioned her as well. Same thing, this white woman who is allegedly pro-black and loves black people and blah, blah, blah. And she was online talking lots of stuff after Michael Brown Jr. was killed. She even went to Ferguson. That was how I found out about her, was someone posting a video of her and her child and her black husband were all in Ferguson. And she was promoting her book, The Wheat Money. And same type of thing. People were, oh, my, this is the greatest white woman in the history of life. Other caller who had a hand up, do you have commentary?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. This is Ken Steele from Chicago. I just wanted to make mention that, yes, one thing that I immediately noticed when she was reporting the demographic breakdown of her community, she amended her answer several times. And on top of that, she originally said that she grew up in the urban part of town or in an urban community, so to speak. And I think white supremacists use the word urban as a euphemism for black. And then it later was revealed that, there was only two other black people at her school that she said that she was friends with. So that's something that I think is fairly consistent with those that I suspect are practicing white supremacy. I've even had a discussion with, something that I noticed was that she evoked the whole nameless black friend motif that I see that white supremacists frequently evoke. I even had discussions with, a very famous comedian, Ricky Gervais. He even used that whole, I had a black friend and he was the only black person in my community and I was his friend and I defended him from attacks of racism and whatnot. And I think this is just something that they do. I think that's just a very, a more refined or a more evolved version of the I have a black friend trope that they constantly go back to in these sort of discussions. And also, I did not expect her to stay for the whole discussion. One thing that I'm noticing amongst suspected white supremacists these days is that they are losing their patience with black people who are not in agreement with them. They will not even engage you these days, whereas before they may entertain discussions or they may want to go back and forth. These days, I've just noticed frequently that these people are now just on, their code is just not to communicate with any non-white person that they disagree with. So I'm going to have to give you, the thumbs up for getting her on the line, for getting her to reveal herself. And thank you for this very constructive broadcast. I'll mute my line.
Let's see, our caller in Michigan and the caller at 1-842. I guess we'll start with the females. Caller in Michigan, did you have commentary?
Good evening, Gus, and to the callers and listeners. I did want to ask about the clip you played with Mr. Fuller. Is that in the archives, or is there a way I can listen to the full broadcast of that?
Mr. Edward Williams has it on the Counter-Racism site. I think if you go there, I think it's under the tab for articles. Let me see if I can find it here. All right, so you go to counter-racism.com, and then under articles, so if you go click on it, or you don't even have to click over it, if you just hover over the tab for articles, and then where it says conversations with people, a side menu will pop out, and where it says Neely Fuller and white person, if you click on it, it will give you the exchange that we started with.
Awesome. I see it. I was following as you were instructing, and that's pretty much what I wanted to ask. I, just like the last caller just mentioned, I'm just noticing how people like the guest and those who call themselves, I don't even know whatever her term was for, if she considered herself a good white person or just whatever, but they prove how, they're not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. And the more and more that I hear discussions with white people, specifically like her, it proves to me that they're not. And they are so dangerous because I know just with my, I have teenagers, And my children, they get confused with these so-called cool white kids. And they act like the lady that was just on. And so the more I hear conversations with them, it's just obvious that they are very, very dangerous. And I appreciate you getting her on because it's very helpful with minimizing confusion. And I will mute my line. Thanks.
Absolutely. Not ignorant. Even whomever you think the dumbest white person is, if they know that they're white, that will go a long way to making things happen, getting things done, even solving problems for them, as long as they know that they're white, what that means, and they can tell the difference, they can pick out who the people are who are classified as not white, who the people are that are classified as white. In a lot of situations, that might be enough for things to work out favorably for you as a white person, male, female, child, whatever it happens to be. The caller at 1-842, I guess I'm deferring. Our caller, lady, did you have questions in New York? Lady, did you have a commentary? Sorry.
Yeah, I had a question more about the Levin case than the Guess, if that's okay with you.
Yes, ma'am.
Guess. So I'm looking up this Loving case because they had the book in the library about families, and this was the book for kids. Actually, there was two books, and in both of the books, my kids noticed that they were interracial marriages, and then there was one that was like same-sex. So the question about the Loving is, I'm really having a hard time finding something that discusses the molestation of this woman, being that she was 11 years old. If anybody could help me with some resources so that I can include that in my teaching about this with my children, that'd be awesome. And the second question is, I'm seeing photos. It looks like, did she only have two children with this man?
I thought she said she had one child. Could have to double check. When I was on her Facebook page, I did see multiple children in some of the photos, but I was not sure if these were all her children or if, you know, this was a situation where they were just at a playground or something and other people were just around or what have you. But I thought she said here that she had a child.
Oh, no, I apologize. I was referring to the Loving.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. Right, okay. Multiple children. Okay, continuing.
Okay. Because the children, when I'm seeing photos, they pass for white to me. I didn't know if anyone else had saw any photos of those because I'm looking and I'm seeing things that Miss Loving's was Native American and African American. I didn't know if she had any white ancestry too. Because the children definitely look white, and then they have documentaries of them as adults, and they definitely can still pass for white. So that was my other question, if she had any white ancestry herself for these two children. It looks like a boy and a girl to certainly look just like white children. And that was it. Thank you.
I know personally for the first part of the question in terms of, literature or resources to help your children understand the molestation aspect of the Levin case, which I think is accurate. That's the way it should be described. And that's the way it would be described if it was a 17-year-old white woman and a 23-year-old black male. I do not know what to point you other than W. Kamau Bell's comedy strip, and I would even have some reservations about that because it is accurate, and as I stated, that was the first time that I heard someone insert the ages when talking about this and calling that out as incorrect, accurately so, but I mean, it is in the context of jokes and being humorous about this, and I think this is something that, you know, we should take seriously, but even with that said, that's the only thing I can even think of where someone has pointed that out, unless you want to play this program for them and having this discussion around it. But I don't even know, if listeners, if anybody does know of where other people have talked about it seriously and talked about it as molestation, that would be great. But I'm not aware. Oh, in the second portion, I'm looking at some of the photographs of the children now, the loving children, Mildred and Richard's offspring. They do look kind of on the, I'm not sure. I would have to see what they look like now to see if they could pass as white. They do look kind of on the pale side, but a lot of these photos are when they were younger, so I'm not sure. I'd have to see what they look like now to make an assessment about, you know, if they can pass as white or not.
Thank you.
For sure. Other folks can chime in. Let me nab some of our other callers who haven't shared at all. The caller at 1-842, did you have a commentary you wanted to share?
Greetings, everybody. Yes, a little bit. Number one, I am slightly disappointed that she hung up. I was really looking forward to, I was hoping she was less refined so that she was more open and then we could get to some nitty gritty questions and kind of get her perspective. But I knew she was going to hang up when she mumbled something, and I didn't hear exactly what it was, but I just knew from her tone she was just about to dip on the conversation. But I did appreciate the moments that we did have because it reminded me of something I wanted to talk about at some point. So I'll just tell you a quick little story. Because I listened to Barbara Trepanier, and then I think her name is Crystal Tyler, and then Sue Africa, like right back to back to back. So I was able to like pretty much listen to how white women act whenever they're confronted with, you know, questions. And then I think, I'm not sure, the one about who does Haiti, I forget her name, that might have been Barbara, but anyway. So I happened to go to like a brunch. I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. Brunch is like a big thing over here. But anyway, I went to a brunch, and this white man was there. And, you know, he's drinking and drinking and drinking, and I'm like paying attention because I'm like, yeah, keep drinking. I'm going to ask you some questions, because he's all like, yeah, I'm from California. And, you know, I don't see color and all this kind of stuff. Like, he's trying to flirt with me and whatever. So then I just like whip it out on him. And I was like, whoa, what's your definition of racism? And he's like, and he hits me with the same thing from the guy from the other night. Oh, there's so many different definitions of racism. Oh, everyone has their own perspective and blah, 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 blah. So then I said, well, here's a functional, working, constructive definition that I think is useful. What do you think? And immediately, like I couldn't even get 5 minutes into the conversation before he started turning flush red in the face and was like, are you calling me a racist? I mean, he might as well have just been a white woman the way he carried it. And I was like, you know what? Never mind. I'm good, you know? But I thought that was fascinating because that really is, I think that's like the big joker. Like if there's a deck of cards, it's just like their joker. They just pull out, bam, you must be calling me a racist and therefore I don't want to talk to you anymore. And then they get all emotional and defensive and you can just be cool, calm, collected and everything. But they never engage, like they never just want to give a real definition of racism. And then when they do, they back away from it really quickly. And start doing all of their racist tactics. I always feel bad for, I don't think I have a constructive or codified word for, you know, mixed children or whatever, but I always feel really bad when they are kind of stuck with the white parent because I see when they grow up kind of their confusion, their level of confusion, they don't really know where they belong and all that kind of stuff. And for her to have rudely left the conversation that way, like not even have enough class to just say, you know what, I'm offended, I don't like this, this is uncomfortable, I don't, you know, whatever, I'm going to leave, thank you very much for your time, you know, just be professional or classy or anything. She just hung the phone up. And I wonder, like, when she looks at her child, what she'll think, you know, because you weren't guys, disrespectful or anything like that. I know people don't like it when you chuckle. They read that and they're like, well, why is he chuckling? Like, you know, they feel that, but even still, you know, she sounded a lot like Crystal Waters to me. And, they do like racism is ridiculous, but racism is really as deeply entrenched as just like this passive aggressive behavior too. That's just completely misconstrued. They'll act like they're being so kind and polite. And I was kind of not offended. Like it's an emotional thing, but I was like, t-shirts though, t-shirts. That's what we need. More t-shirts. And she was like, well, no cost to us. Like, really? That's what we want. We want some free t-shirts. Thanks. But, yeah, thank you for the show. I'm sad it ended so early. I was hoping we were going to Carrie. I was ready. You know, I'm up and excited, but it's kind of like anticlimactic, but it's all good. But it's always good to watch their behavior so I can become more codified in mind and see the pattern. And they are very rude. They'll say they're so about us, but never actually have a real conversation. Even the guy with the book was like, I'm here to talk about my book. I'm like, okay, well, you can still answer some questions since we have you here. But yeah, so thank you very much. And I'll mute myself now.
Dissatisfied with t-shirts, man. That's the state of niggers in 2016. Incidentally, Crystal Tyler mentioned Sue Africa, legendary from just earlier this summer. Dr. Barbara Trepanier from some time ago, who also exited early state about the same length of time. I will say with the definition, I think that's why it's so important in terms of having a definition of racism and stating explicitly the definition of racism. Whites love to have these conversations where it's not connected to an accurate definition or an definition period, where people can just be throwing these terms around because they know you can say anything as long as you don't have a definition attached to racism. You can just throw it around and people can make assumptions about what it means. Or once we're down that, hey, I can start saying that non-white people are racist, that I, as a white woman, I am a victim of racism. You can just start to say anything. Once you have an accurate definition for racism, it does not allow them as much room to be illogical, to be irrational, to say anything. And again, whites are not ignorant about racism. They know that. Once you have an accurate definition of racism, it's like, uh-oh. And if the definition is accurate, it will indict them as a white man, a white woman, white child, whatever they happen to be, just being a member of the global white minority. If the definition of racism is accurate, you are indicted, and they know this. And that, too, it's like, oh, man, like, I'm not even interact, because I think that has happened quite a few times on the program where we've had whites where just on hearing the definition, either they got upset or they said that you're calling all white people racist. I think one of the other popular ones is, well, I don't think all white people are conscious. We're just having an accurate grasp of what white supremacy racism is. It should suggest, and rightly so, that white people are deliberately, willfully engaged in war against non-white people, especially black people worldwide, because that's what it is. And they know this. They're not ignorant about that. Once the conversation is being discussed in that manner, they are much less interested in engaging, as demonstrated by Ms. Freeman's exit, in my opinion. Did anybody have literature on the Mildreds, the Lovings, excuse me, Mildred and Richard Loving, at being accurately described as molestation? Anybody have any sources you would recommend for children on that?
I don't have any, but I was going to say, because I did look into it a while ago, and I believe that purposefully there is no literature out there because white people are so successfully spread this story as if it was a love story, just like they do with Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. And I think that's one story where they've done that so successfully that no one has actually taken that up as a subject to look into it, so far as I've been able to see. So I would, if anyone else knows, let me know. But like I said, even when I asked her relative about it, she didn't really know much about materials, more about articles than anything else that she had told me about. But as far as any books or literature that discusses the actual sexual abuse and terrorism of Mildred Loving, I don't know of any, and I think that's purposeful in order that no one would ever look at that particular story as rape, which is what it is. They want us to look at it like most people talk about Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, as if it's some sort of romantic, you know, relationship.
I reckon no one else has details on that, which not surprising, not surprising. Any other commentary folks want to get out? Any other patterns? I was curious about the situation with the child's father, even with what I heard, because I think Dr. Umar said that when he was on the program last time that he felt bad, or he, I think he, the way he articulated it was he had a special place in his heart for non-white children who have one white parent. And I was thinking, does that include President Obama? even the female caller, where she said she feels bad for them, like we feel bad for President Obama. Wouldn't he also qualify for that, since he has one white parent and one non-white parent? I don't hear most non-white people talk as though they are sympathetic for what he has had to endure having a white parent. Anything else folks want to make sure that they share, get in?
Yeah, I had something else to say. First, I wanted to say, that Black Lives Matter rally that you was talking about, with the guy thing with the gorilla mask and just handing out bananas to black people. To me, that's further evidence that I think that white people are not afraid of black people. I can't think of any white organization where I could think of a black person that would go amongst white people and do something offensive to them. I just don't see that happening. I don't think you can find a black person crazy enough to do that, because they already know what the consequences of that's going to be. But, this person's just like, hey, I'm just going to go clown these niggas. They can't do nothing anyway. And that's the mentality they have. I just don't believe that theory that they're afraid of black people. I do think they're afraid of genetic annihilation. That's just logic. But us individually, they know they got us under wraps. As for the caller, Ken Steele from Chicago, I think he brought up a great point. The theory, I defended this only black guy in the city, or that whole thing that they do. See, I've learned through my studies of the system that white people have consistently, and this is probably the most important part of the system, when you really think about it, is they don't hesitate to make examples out of other white people for helping black people. I mean, that's just something they don't stand for. They even think another white person's helping a nigga, it's wrong. It's like, oh, you gotta get rid of him. Make an example out of him so nobody even thinks about it. And they've done that consistently, time and time again. So therefore, that white ally, that theory is illogical, because they would kill that person. They don't get rid of them first. Don't even think about it. And I'll be my wife. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I would reiterate, based on, and it's quite consistent, when a white person with the mindset, one of these more refined white people, they have this "how dare you question me" type of attitude, that you can hear it. You can hear it coming in their voice, on how they answer your questions. I'm not supposed to be questioned. Don't you see that I'm acting nice and benevolent to you people? What it sounds close to, that kind of like is very, very much revealing. But unfortunately, the type of non-white person who can pick up on it is someone who has actually spent time into wanting to understand or attempting to understand this global system of racism, white supremacy, what it is and how it works. For the most part, unfortunately, there's a lot of non-white people who actually would be on the side of the white person. Why are you questioning her? Why are you questioning him like that? Don't you see this is a nice white person? He has a white son or a white daughter. His wife, a non-white son and daughter. He has a black wife. she has a black husband, quote unquote, you know, and which is understandable because the reason why the global system of racist white supremacy is what I just said is because a lot of non-white people are confused. But I can speak myself, people like her are quite obvious to me, even before they open up their mouths. And then by opening up their mouths, it's kind of like just confirms what I hear. Yeah, thank you. Got your message. I didn't get your message, though, Gus. I think I may have erased it by mistake.
Oh, right on, right on. Technology, man.
Well, it had, you know, had one of those restricted number things, and I previously have gotten calls from that, and it ends up being a situation where somebody playing on the phone. So, I would attempt to be more concise on what I was trying to get in contact with you about on your Facebook.
Oh, okay, right on, right on. One thing I did want to include, when the whites, when they bring up some incident or situation where they have allegedly helped a black person, right, where they say, well, I defended these two Negroes at my high school or whatever else that they say, I think it's also important, racists squabble with other racists. Like, that has happened many, many times, numerous times throughout the history of racism, white supremacy, sometimes on a small scale, sometimes on a large scale, where they have disagreements about how the plantation should be run. Just because a white person is, quote unquote, helping or defending a black person, that doesn't even mean, in my view, that they are, quote unquote, helping that black person. It might just mean that they have a different strategy about how we should go about practicing white supremacy. And I think that's the way that it should be looked at, regardless of what they're doing. If they're whites who are saying that you shouldn't be calling black people niggers, it might just mean that, hey, I think it would be better for the business of terrorizing dark people if we are not so explicit about what our intentions are and how we think about them. We can just do that in private as opposed to making a big deal about it. And then they'll, you know, be huffing and puffing and might get an accurate understanding of us, an attempt to work against what we're doing. That might be what is happening. And I submit that that is what's happening some of the time that this is going on. But I would just keep that in mind, even if it is a white person and they're saying that I'm, you know, helping the black people or I'm fighting against racism, that it could just mean that they have a different approach. They have a different methodology for how they want the plantation run. So that's what they're doing. And I have seen that in action before. In fact, it was a white woman, Georgia Roberts, at the University of Washington here. She cited they were on a study abroad trip in South Africa, and the non-white students were saying that the white man who was in charge of the study abroad program was racist in how he was conducting the program. This white woman, Gloria Roberts, she sided with them and chided this white man as being racist and, you know, fought with them and going with the university administration and all that. They removed the white man, put her in charge of the program, and she is now the one practicing racism in charge of this program. That's what I mean. And that sort of thing has happened regularly under the system of racism, white supremacy, might even be on display right now with the presidential election. The person who dialed in last four digits, 9440, did you have commentary?
Yeah, Gus. This is Lou out of Kansas City. You know, I find that kind of dynamic with kind of judging who is for justice and who is somebody who is just practicing deception or racism, white supremacy. I find that dynamic between me and my wife. I will be a little bit more reserved, and my wife being a lot more open, her upbringing just slightly different than mine, mostly around black people still, but just we'll be having conversations and how different we'll be on the side of that, where I'll be more suspicious. I'm looking at the person's actions, and I'm lining it up with what I know to be history, with what I know to be like pathological behaviors, all that. That's all going through my mind. And my wife is on the opposing side, where she is more like, I wouldn't say forgiving, because when she spots it, she's not for it. But for her, she's more, I guess, what you would call, I guess, objective or open-minded, I guess. And, you know, for her, you know, she calls me, at times she calls me racist. And I'd be like, I don't get it. And like, how can I be racist? I'm calling out things from what I'm seeing from lining up years of historical knowledge, statistical knowledge, and going, okay, this person seems to be practicing this. It is lining up with this. It's lining up with this archetype, so to speak, and this person is practicing this, or they are showing signs of it. Now, it may be refined, where they're smiling and doing it with, you know, with a smile, but this is what I'm seeing it as. And it for us, is like, I kind of stay away from it, because it almost sometimes it's like a landmine, you know? And so it's just, man, it's, this system is done wonders on some of us. And I will say that as far as solidarity goes, and for us, all of us in the equal treatment, and just, I'll say that sometimes my wife concedes that, you know what? She says, you know, I have not seen what you've seen. It's very possible that in way that I may be aligned, the way that she'll say, well, the way I may be aligned is because maybe I haven't experienced or seen some of the same things you have. So therefore, I may be more lenient. So she does see that aspect. But it's just a difficult talking point and conversation, I think, in my household. I want to end that with just one question. How much do you think our recognizing it and our behavior goes to the point of maybe our own history and looking at, like, for instance, a work like Chancellor Williams' Destruction of the Black Civilization, where he talks about, where I've seen him have commentary on the book and say that that's been one of our spurs in our boots, basically, as a civilization, is that we are the brotherhood seekers, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it seems that at points when our power gets usurped and we're in that, where that power vacuum happens, it sometimes happens because we are too much of brotherhood seekers and don't see it in ourselves, as opposed to maybe the last 500 years. That's my question. Like, how much of it do you think is just us not learning from the thousands of years, as opposed to maybe this unique experience we've had for the past 400 or 500 years? That's my line.
My response would be just, you know, the statement that you shared, where you said your wife said that, you know, sometimes she'll accuse you of being racist. Well, I said earlier, a lot of these things just come down to us not understanding what racism is, how it works. That's why Mr. Fuller has it on page one, and not understanding what it means to be white. I think that just really gets to the core of a lot of this, where we just have not understood that, and it has not been reflected in our behavior accurately, certainly not in any mass way on the vast majority of non-white people. It just has not been there for a variety of reasons. But that's, you know, one of the key things that I try to get across in this program. I think when we start to get a better, more accurate understanding of what racism is, then we won't be accusing other non-white people of being racist, which happens all the time and is encouraged when we just don't have accurate information about what white supremacy racism is. And in terms of how we treat others, in terms of giving whites the benefit of the doubt, that's one of the things I say on this broadcast all the time. Whites never get the benefit of the doubt, ever, under this system. It's too much history. Just understanding what it is, it's just no way that would maybe change if we didn't have white supremacy. But I think just not having that understanding. And I think one of the things, Dr. Joy DeGruy, I think she shared it, I think, the second time that she was a guest on this program. She said that she'll just put it up on the board, like, what are the areas where white people practice racism against black people on a wide scale, where it's not just a one-time isolated thing, but where large numbers of black people are mistreated. And she said that they'll fill up the whole board. Oh, housing and the school situation, mass incarceration, banking and loans, blah, blah, blah. They'll fill up the whole board. You know, the Flint situation, contaminated water, and blah, blah, blah. And she says, okay, after they filled up the whole board, she'll erase it. And she says, okay, now, list the ways that black people practice racism against white people. And they never get one thing on the board. She says where that kind of helps make it crystal what we mean when we say racism, that you cannot be non-white and practice racism. There's only one functional form of racism. And that, I mean, because that really gets to the key, like just with your situation with your wife and maybe non-white people in total under this problem. If you do not have an accurate grasp of racism, not even saying that you have to, you know, have my definition of white supremacy racism, but when your definition is not accurate, when it doesn't match up with what is actually happening on this planet, that is going to produce confusion in everything. That's why Mr. Fuller says that all the time. If you don't understand white supremacy racism, what it is, how it works, everything else will confuse you. And once you don't have that, and me personally, if it is a black person and I see they don't have an accurate understanding of racism, we're probably not going to have very many conversations about racism. Like, for me, it would just not be anything to talk about. Like, and that's not saying that I would look at them and call them names or anything like that, but there's no way we could have a conversation about this subject when you don't have a definition. It would be the same way. And I've done this with non-white people before, where they have been quick, kind of in the same context, where they have, you know, leapt to the defense of some race soldier. And I will just get them to pause for a second and say, well, do you study racism? And they'll immediately say, no, this is not a topic I study. This is not anything I spend any time researching. And I say, okay, do you have a definition of racism? One, a functional definition that you use consistently, you've researched, and you think this is accurate? No. Okay, well, if we were talking about nuclear physics, you don't study nuclear physics, you would not leap into the conversation and presume to tell someone they don't know what they're talking about or really offer much of an opinion on anything because it's not something that you study. It would be the same thing. And I wouldn't tell them that, but it would be the same thing that I would be thinking. You don't study this. This is not something that you have a grasp of, not because we don't agree, but just clearly you don't have an accurate definition for racism because you're labeling a non-white person as a racist. So there's not a whole lot of dialogue we can have. I'll listen to what you say. That's your opinion. You still get VGQ, but I'm not going to do a whole lot of, you know, explaining and going into detail and that sort of thing until I see that the person is receptive to, well, maybe I need to reconsider this. Let's just get back to basics and definition of racism and let's discuss there. Until that they get that confirmed, solidified, there just wouldn't be a whole lot of back and forth. I would be doing my codified response.
And I found myself having to do that. My wife is discovering it a lot more, working in these, because she has a business administration degree, something like that. Business administration. I think her minor is like literature, like African American studies, believe it or not. And she's discovering it more and more as she works in these lily white offices that who exactly is aligned for her and who is not. And that's the only sad part for me, is because, you know, most non-white people who I talk to who have to learn by trial by fire, and I know that, and like you said, I avoid them. When they come to me and tell me those things, I usually can just, I can shake it off, or I can maybe I even scold and be like, now see what you did? I'll try to tell you. But it is especially personal for me because that's my wife, and she's learning trial by fire who her friends are, who's in alignment with her, and who is actively trying to push her down. And take delight in it too. And that's the only part where it hits me personally. Because I know I'm a man, I know I've confronted the worst aspects of it. Because I've been in industries, especially the construction industries, and so I confront the worst aspects of it. And so I'm very clear. But for her to continually discover it, and for her to trial by fire, that's for me where it gets personal, where it does hurt me a little bit because it's hurting her. And she's seeing that. And I feel like in certain ways, it's breaking that innocence, I guess, so to speak. So, yeah.
Just as best as much, and I know it's, you know, it being your wife, that that's certainly gonna have a personal impact on you, seeing her being heard about all this. But I would suggest to try to minimize the. I tried to tell you this. It's been my experience that that happens a lot with Black people, and sometimes that can it can decrease the receptiveness, because I think sometimes people get agitated, particularly if they're being mistreated or they're already feeling violated, to have someone say, "I told you so." I tried to, like, I would try to minimize that if you can, and just to keep in mind that she is a victim. That's what being a victim of racism is, just not having an accurate understanding of all of this. All of us have to go through the process of learning. That's why I say I reject the term wake up, because it is not an instantaneous thing, learning about racism, white supremacy. And I mean, really getting beyond the superficial thinking, the way that most of us have been victimized to poorly think about this, as to think about this is a whole total world concept that dominates every aspect of your life. That's just not the understanding that most of us have, in particular putting that into how individual whites function around us. We just don't have that, and it can be very, very difficult for non-white people to start to, you know, grasp what we're talking about, and the depth, the comprehensiveness of how this is functioning and what this means for them on a personal level. It can be quite a bit to grasp. So just try to have as much patience as you can. And when she is receptive, the times when she has been violated and she does want to talk about this, you know, try as best you can to share constructive information. One thing you might even want to have at the ready, there was a white woman. She just had an article published in the Washington Post, even though it had been published previously, where she explained very bluntly why there are a lack of Black faculty members at most historically white academies, institutions. And she just said it was racism, that whites don't want them there. And that's as she stated it that bluntly. Whites don't want them there. And she explained all the reasons and how this works out, and saying that whites will make all these exceptions to hire a white person who doesn't fit the qualifications or whatever impediments to their employment, that they will do whatever they need to do to get that white person in. But they do not do that for Black people. And they will have lots of different codes and euphemisms for explaining this. They won't just say, "We don't want the niggers here," but they'll find some other cute way of articulating the same thing. She broke all this down. It was in the Washington Post. Maybe have that at the ready the next time that she comes in with an issue with some of her white faculty members. And boop, maybe that will help add some clarification to what she's experiencing. Just hang tight one second. I want to nab the other folks in who we had not heard from yet. The caller, I guess both of you are on the vote line. The two people that called in on the vote line, did you have commentary?
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. Hopefully everyone's having the best evening they can possibly have. I'm grateful that she was quick and hung up quickly, so we didn't have to hear, "Oh, well, what more do I need to do?" and blah, blah, blah. So they tend to do that as well. For the gentleman, I'm sorry you're having these, I'm sure, hopefully, I know it's not too, you're having these, you know, issues with your spouse, but like Gus said, just take your time and just be patient. I could just, I'm not married, but I did, so this is kind of on a very smaller scale, but I just moved to, I live in Macon now, just moved here. They put an article in the newspaper how these two churches were going to meet and talk about race and, you know, all this good stuff. So I went because it was in the paper, and I thought everyone can go. So I went. I heard the lecture. Then they went downstairs to have a discussion, and they wanted everyone to mix up. So, of course, all the white people flocked towards me because they were like, "Oh, she's a Black person. They told us to mix up." So I was very clear that I did not attend the church. It was my second time there. I don't represent these people. They're nice people, but I don't represent them. I was very frank with them. I told them I didn't need to talk to any more white people unless you were serious about solving the problem. And if you are serious about solving the problem that you created and you want me to help you, you should pay me. Like, you pay McDonald's when you're hungry. You pay cleaning crew when you dirty up your house. You have done this problem. You want me to help you, pay me to help you solve the problem. They thought that was strange. But most of them were older, so I guess they just thought I was cute. So we go on, get to a big group discussion, and they get the white women, a couple, "Oh, what do I do? I'm so helpless." I just got up. I was like, "Wait, stop. stop. I'm tired of this. Please stop this. I don't know what to do, crap. You know, they don't want to hear that. So, but I told them, and I said, you know, you don't need me to tell you how to treat people right, love people. And then I told them in the paper that I read, and thank you, Gus, for making sure to make sure that we read the local paper, which I started doing since I moved here. I told them there was an article in the paper about the speed zones. You can make sure the speed zones are equitably distributed throughout the community so all the black people don't have to pay all these high speeding tickets. And so, you know, then they cut me off and went off because I guess that was the solution. That was too much. So I went to the pastor because I went to the black pastor because this event was held at the black version of the church because the churches have the same name. That's a big problem. So I went to the black pastor and I said, I didn't mean to be disrespectful because I don't, you know, want to cause any anti-blackness or anything like that. I didn't tell him anti-blackness. I just said, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful. But I said, but these people are saying things and they just sound crazy. I just met you people and I like you all. And I don't want these white people. Honestly, I don't want these white people running all over you. That's what I told him. And I said, you know, they always ask about a problem. I gave him a solution. And then he goes, well, maybe that's not her calling. I said, it's not her calling to help to go to City Hall. I was like, okay, whatever. And then he promptly told me that I was welcome to go upstairs and listen to a lecture, but that the discussion was mainly for the members of the church. So I said, thank you, and I promptly left, and I will not be going back. Thank you.
Fascinating. I wish you could have got a recording of this.
I did try to take the lecture. I'll have to see if it came out well. I don't know if it did, but they're having two more. And if you want the name of the historian or the white pastor who's trying to help, I know it's in the paper. I can get it because if they're really serious, maybe they'll come on this show. I try not to recommend people, not because I think it's a wonderful show, but if they're not serious, I mean, I don't need them to waste our time.
I dig it. If you want to send it, I know we have other folks that are in the Georgia area. They might, you know, be interested in seeing who this is or getting more details about it. If you know, have the time, I would say that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, I should be able to get the article.
Outstanding. That fantastic suggestion with the speed limits, because these are, you know, things that can be done, like as opposed to us just coming here and eating cheesecake and wasting, you know, 5 hours or however long the meeting goes. Like, these are specific things that you can do to help solve problems, change the speed limits, or make sure that they're set at the same limit so that black people are not, you know, getting all of these extortion fines like what they were doing in Ferguson and other areas. And if they're saying that they don't want to do it, well, what are we here for? I thought we were trying to solve problems. That right there, again, showing that we're not really serious about solving these problems, because that doesn't sound like that's not something that's going to require, you know, $1 billion to make sure that the speed limits are set the same in the black areas and the white areas, I don't think, unless, you know, I missed something.
I didn't think so either, but I've only been here 6 weeks, so I don't know.
Amazing. Amazing grace, no less. The other person that dialed in on us, I guess the vote line, did you have commentary as well?
Yes, I do. Good evening to everyone. I just wanted to know, just say something, and I'm sure this probably it doesn't go for anybody that's on the line now, but it's really important to, especially for black people, to recognize when white people that are on the media or whatever, and they're, you know, trying to be outraged about another white person that's practicing racism, and they're using words like, man, this person is stupid, this person is ignorant, this person is an idiot, this person is crazy. You know, the common words they use to describe this act of racism, that, you know, these white people are not looking for justice. We shouldn't be praising these people. We shouldn't be saying, okay, yeah, they're on our side. They recognize this racism that's going on. They're not seeking justice. They are strictly just saying that these people are stupid because this person that committed this act of racism is not refined. That's all they're saying. Whenever they say stupid, ignorant, idiot, crazy, all they're saying is that that person didn't practice racism in a refined way, and they're stupid for not being refined. And that's all that they're saying. And I try to point this out to people that are, you know, willing to listen whenever I'm around someone and let's say something's on TV or something's on the media where, in particular, for example, like the, and I'm not sure if these people are classified as white. They probably could be. But, of course, you play a lot of clips of the Young Turks and you're just outraged. Oh, my gosh. Or someone like a Bill Maher or something like that. They're just, man, stupid. This person is, you know, all they're saying is, yes, they are stupid. They're stupid because they're not refined and they're not practicing, you know, racism the way that they should be. And I'm not trying to get off into, I guess this is Area 8, but I'm just saying, I believe that especially these white females, whenever they're trying to claim to be anti-racist, it's always, I think it's 99 or 90% of the time it's sexually driven. That's what I think for the most part. But that's all I have for right now. Thank you for letting me share.
For sure. I think B. Moore shared that this was some time ago, but it was one of the news clips for the compensatory call-in where it was the same type of situation where some white individual had either on social media or they were making commentary and they were calling black people niggers and all the other stuff. And they got in trouble for it. And some white woman got on and said, oh, yep, you're supposed to get in trouble. You have to be careful what you say. Where it's the same type of articulation where it's not that this person should be indicted for practicing white supremacy. It's you are supposed to be more refined than that. You cannot just be out here being reckless about how we do business. We're supposed to have a better code about how we practice racism. And this person violated the racist code. That I think exactly the way that you stated it, I agree 100%. And what I said earlier, I think whites, they know the value of suggesting that racism or the racist whites are just a small number of three-tooth-having, illiterate, backwoods country white folks, bumpkins. I think they know the value of getting us to think that that's what we're dealing with, that the typical white person is not a racist. Nothing could be further from the truth. I've stated for years, when you think of racist, you should think of white woman with an apron and cookies, white man with a suit on and a briefcase, or a lab coat. That's what you should think of. These are the folks that we're dealing with, not some, you know, illiterate hicks in the backwoods. That's laughable. It's so inaccurate. And in my view, it's a deliberate act of racism. We heard some of that from Ms. Freeman this evening. Any other folks have commented? I think we get everybody. Did anybody have any additional comments, what they heard from Ms. Freeman or anything else they wanted to make sure they got in?
Yes. First, I wanted to say, too, I wonder if just with that last name, Freeman, that tends to be a name that former slaves tend to take when they become free. So I wonder if she has any black people in her family that her white older relatives may have been raping during the slavery period of this country's history. Also, I wanted to touch on what the male caller spoke about in reference to his wife. It's funny because I sometimes go through a similar thing with my wife. I've definitely opened up her mind as far as how she understands racism and how she understands white people. But sadly, because of the severe abuse that she's gotten from other black people, she has taken the stance that she will deal with white people as individuals. So if a white person is nice to her, then she's nice to them. If they're not nice to her, she's not nice to them. And she does the same with black people. And I said, well, you should always, you know, be wary of anyone, black or white. But I would say your antenna always should go up when you're dealing with white people. So it's really interesting because I found it that my experience with my wife has always been where she's met a white person who seems to be nice or treats her in a decent way. Days later, she'll recount that whole situation and somewhere find that she's been the person practiced racism in some way that she wasn't cognizant of in the moment. So even though her experience with white people mirrors my approach, which is all white people are racist and I have as little contact with them as possible and I do nothing to help them, she doesn't want to be as extreme. She says I'm extreme as I am, but
she's understanding that her repeated experiences, and I'm hoping eventually those repeated experiences will start to slowly bring her to a deeper understanding that I have. Maybe she may not express it the same way I do, but I'm hoping for that, and I'm being as patient as possible. Like I said, I say that prayer that Gus says every night. I say it myself. I mean, every time we're on the show, I say it myself every night. And that is something that I use to remind myself, even within my own family, because like the brother said, you know, she is my wife. And, you know, I've always told her, I said, you know, I pray. I say this every time when I get in front of that ancestral altar, that you do not encounter violence with white people due to the lack of understanding of what it means to be white. And I've actually said that to her, because that's my biggest fear, is that she, you know, she does something to assist one of them in a situation where she thinks they need help or something, and something crazy happens. I've been steering her away from that as well. We had a couple situations where I had to literally tell her, you're not pulling over to help this white person. He's white, he'll be fine. And I did it more than once. So that's something I try to put a foot down on, and hopefully eventually she'll understand it and stop it on her own. The other thing I wanted to touch on was, and Gus, when you were discussing white people who defend blacks from other white races, and their attempt to instate a different type of racism, not the type that they're seeing in that moment that they're defending the black person from, that's something that I've really been thinking about, because I felt that way for a number of years, that ultimately when you see a white person defending a non-white person from an overt racist, I just believe that they would prefer a more refined form of racism. So that's a part of their refinement technique, is to fool the non-white person into thinking rhetorical ethics, Dr. Marin Bani, into thinking that, you know, they care about them in some way, so that's why they're coming to their defense. But in reality, they want to practice a more refined form of racism, which white people will show you, like Gus says, better than I can tell you, once you let your guard down enough to think that because they defended you in some way, that they're your quote-unquote white friend, which makes you want to hurl right now. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the firefighter in Florida brought up something really brilliant when he was discussing the attitude that whites take in regards to not being questioned, and black people sometimes even coming to their defense, almost like, well, why are you questioning this good, you know, good white person, this nice white person or whatever, that, oof, nauseating. And then Thomas in New York also brought up something, and I'm going to speak about both of them at the same time. He spoke about white people not being scared of offending blacks, and I thought that was brilliant. And the incident with the white guy wearing the monkey suit and giving out bananas at the Black Lives Matter event, both of those things to me just fall into the category of essentially white people being fully aware of the psychological damage that they've done to us. So when you brutalize someone to the point where you can be holistically offensive in a way that would normally, in a person's mind that's thinking, in just thinking outside the box, might warrant a violent response. And that person has been so brutalized and conditioned for over 500 years to understand that whenever they showed any signs of rebelliousness towards your system of white supremacy, that they would be violently put down like a rabid dog. Then ultimately, you gain that understanding that through that historical intergenerational violence, that you could do that and get away with it. So, yeah, they're not scared of us. They're scared of genetic annihilation, but they're not scared of us because they know that we're not thinking and functioning as whole human beings, that we have been basically turned into shells of ourselves, and most of us are walking around shell-shocked. So the things that if we were sane, if we were in our right minds, if we did qualify for black mental health, those things that we should not and would not tolerate when we have our senses, we don't have our senses. So they're acutely aware of that. And then the aspect of what the firefighter in Florida was talking about, in especially when he talked about black people coming to the defense of the white person, again, it's Stockholm Syndrome. We've been conditioned to always put ourselves in a place that's less than to any white person in the room. And that's through the system of white supremacy. So in that situation where a black person, and also where a lot of us have been successfully fooled into thinking there's a such thing as good white people, there's a such thing as white friends, there's a such thing as, you know, this white person did something nice for me, so they're, you know, they're my buddy. And when I also say they have a deep and innate understanding of that as well. And we now, because of our connection to these white people and a lot of us seeking white validation, we will come to their defense because, again, they know that they have us, you know, psychologically abused and terrorized to the point where this Stockholm Syndrome manifests itself in a sense of us defending the very cause of our misery. So I just think that's something we need to think about. That's something that I think about a lot. Really, all I really think about is fighting the system of racism and white supremacy when I'm not doing, you know, anything of significance with my family. And it's something that I do because it's the only thing to do. And until there's something, this system has changed, there's nothing else for me to do. Thank you all for listening to what I have to say. I'll mute my line.
For sure, for sure. One of our folks wrote in as well. Her comment was, Kelly Freeman appears to be intimidated by your level of intelligence. She's trying her best, albeit incorrectly, to use big words. That was her thought. I didn't think I was using any. I know she said she thought Ms. Freeman was trying to use big words, but I didn't think I was using any big words or anything. I thought I was being pretty plain spoken with how I was presenting things. Did anybody else get that impression?
I didn't think you used big words. I think naturally you have a pretty extensive vocabulary. So I think as a result, you just, you know, I don't think you really spoke in a way in which you used a lot of big words. I know you tend to sometimes use words that might be considered big, you know, to other folks. But I think also it's your tone and your approach to asking questions. I think white people are not used to, and I really think it scares them when they encounter a black person who is non-emotional and they're able to ask probing questions in a methodical, logical manner. When they approach or they come across a black person like that, they get totally troubled because they're looking at a black counter-racist version of themselves as a racist. And because it's almost like playing poker where you just don't let the enemy see your hand, that's the approach you have to take, methodical, non-emotional, and just, you know, always sticking to the point. And that's what they do to fluster us. That's what they do to terrorize us psychologically. So I think when she encountered someone like you, and I think also the fact that she's 29, she's a younger white woman, and I think she's of a specific age in which she's of the belief that, you know, sexual relationships with black people is fine, you know, and all of just the way the society is going, she's in that mindset. So I think when she came across you and you approach questions in that way and you take that approach, I think that did it more than the wordplay. That's what really unnerved her and made her uncomfortable. And as you started to ask more questions as the show went along, she became so uncomfortable she had to up and jump off the program because essentially you were peeling the layers and the layers of the onion of her stink, her racist stink off, and it was uncomfortable, so she had to get off the phone as quickly as possible. That's my opinion.
Right. I think that, you know, unlike Crystal Tyler, and Sue, and really, I stick to those two. They had the mentality, whereas I can't believe that this nigga's questioning me, and they stuck to that mentality, and they went through with the whole phone call and checked the questions. Whereas this one, she had the mentality where, oh, no, this nigga ain't questioning me, and she hung up the phone. Because when white people realize that they're talking to black people that understand what they're doing, they don't want to talk to that black person. They want to talk to black people that don't understand. You know, they could fill up a whole hall with, you know, it's from Tyler's point, you know, she came through like, listen, I'm married to a black crackhead. You know, I mean, how dare y'all question if I'm a racist? You know, I'm married to a black crackhead who I took his genetic material and made a child with. I mean, I'm not a racist. And Sue, you know, I lost my kid. You know, like that, they stuck with it. This one didn't have nothing to hold on. She just was like, man, this ain't going to go good. Let me leave. while it's early, because really, I'm white, and I don't have to sit here and be questioned by these niggas in the first place. And I think that was her mentality. And the first thing she started off the whole show, he was like, can you say something about yourself? I'm a white woman. I mean, I don't even think you asked her, are you a white woman? I mean, she just came right out, and that was the first thing she said about herself. She was a white woman, so in my opinion, she was letting it be known that, you know, listen, you know, I'm already in a position of authority. It's no way that the first thing you say about yourself is you're white, unless you're a racist. I mute my line.
Yes, to add on to what is being said, Tim Wise, who is much more veteran than this white female, and also Jane Elliott, both have made a rude response. I can remember the one, because I just listened to it today, in 2010, where by Justice, at the time, I believe Justice was no more than what, 10 years old, 12 years old, and was asking him questions, and he got heated about it. He started getting an attitude about it. Also, Jane Elliott broke to a condescending type of, well, you're incorrect on that, you know, type of response to some questioning that I remember hearing on a program a while back. And so, you know, it's just these are like self-defense measures that non-white people need to pick up on when they're dealing with white people, because this is a dangerous situation when you have these type of people who can almost infiltrate in and around with us almost with impunity, because we don't suspect white people of practicing racism just because they can quote Malcolm X and may have him on his wall or say something soothing at one point in time, and also of course want to have sex with us. And you can really get the truth out of them when you ask them some direct questions. You don't have to be rude, like I've heard. You don't have to be rude or anything like that. Just ask some direct questions to them, and they would break. They would break by the first thing you would get rudeness. In other words, like Mr. Fuller says, the three T's. Tacky. What's the middle one?
Trashy.
Trashy. Yes. They would get tacky and trashy. And then you keep going on, they will get terroristic on you too. You know, they'll start threatening you, you know, at the same time. So, you know, and I mean, it's just a simple codification. That's basically what it is. And you're going to get that kind of response from that way. Like I said, Tim Wise is like in the white refined racist Hall of Fame. So if I can see him break, I know people like that, the younger white female, you know, was going to do what she's going to do. That's my observation.
I believe the level of refinement that the white people are trying to attain will correlate directly to how long they stay on the line with you. I think she was like, hey, I can fool most of the people that I want to, you know, confuse, and I don't need the rest of this, so I'm done with these niggas online. People like, you know, like Tim Wise or, you know, the people that usually stay on for the whole duration, they're really trying to attain the highest level of refinement, so they figure that they can try to sharpen their skills or whatever. Even they I guess, break to a certain degree. Of course, they're still practicing racism, so they're not breaking to that point. But if they feel like, okay, I don't need this, I can fool the people that I need to fool, let me go ahead and hang up and get off the line. But if they're really at the highest level of refinement, they'll stick around and really try to, you know, be confusing and go from there. That's my opinion. Thank you.
One thing I did think was significant, it sounded like she might have been talking to someone else when she said, I'm about to hang up. Like, I don't know if she was in a room or wherever where there may have been other people listening to the program, white or non-white, I don't know. But that was kind of the impression I had when she said that before she hung up. Also,
I heard it.
Yeah, yeah. It's in. If you feel like it, it's in the archive. If you want to go back and listen to see if it sounded like she might have been talking to someone else. I also thought it was, or not important, but it is also relative in the same conversation. Apparently, they have a new post. I really hate the Huffington Post. I make an effort. I deliberately try not to post their content or share information or links from them most of the time. If it's something that they have that is of value, it is posted someplace else online. But they push a lot of the anti-sexual behavior and, in my view, also a lot of whites that they hold up as being good white people, i.e. whites that are not racist. I'm not a fan of Huffington Post at all. But they have a new report explaining why Black Lives Matter to the white father of my black children. The nonsense continues. This is a victim of racism, apparently, who is writing the report, but the incorrectness of the sexual activity continues. Anything else folks need to make sure they get in before we conclude? Anything else?
Hello.
I heard both of you. I guess.
Go ahead.
Right on.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. My name is Makiel. I just wanted to make sure you got the article about what happened about Macon. I just sent it to you. Wanted to make sure I sent it to the right place.
Is it? Did you send it to my email or Facebook or where? Where did you send it?
I sent it to the email Until Justice. I think that should be where I sent it.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, okay. I got it.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Lady?
So I'm still searching. I did find one article that explained about the loving face that they met when she was 11, and it kind of was described as he was a gentleman that mixed well with the people of color, especially when it came to listening to their music. So that was all I was able to find. Everything else really glossed over the fact that they met when she was 11. And that article did mention that she caught his eye at 11. So, you know, that may just be the closest that I will get to having something that mentions the inappropriateness of their relationship. That's it. Thank you.
Maybe we can have some folks write counter-racist reviews of the film that's coming out and point out the age gap between the two. I don't know, in terms of the film that's coming out next month, I don't know where they're going to pick up in the arc of the story, if they're going to pick it up at 11 and 17 or if they're going to pick it up later at 17 and 23. But folks, that can be an assignment. Write a review or do a video or some sort of project where you highlight that and point out the incorrectness of it and how people are ignoring or obfuscating that fact as they discuss and generally celebrate this film and this incident as some sort of progress against racism. Anything else?
Oh, I also wanted to say that that one line that our lady just read speaks to something that Thomas in New York says very often, that pedophilia is white culture. And for him to be 17 and they say that she caught his eye, I mean, I'm thinking about an 11-year-old, especially back then, there wasn't as much hormones in the food, so I'm sure she looked like what an 11-year-old would look like, which would probably be as flat as an ironing board. So I really, to me, that one line just speaks to that understanding that pedophilia is white culture. The other thing is that it's actually something medical. For years now, I've always understood that cayenne pepper is very good for bleeding. And this weekend, I was actually sharpening a knife, and I sliced my finger open. And I took some cayenne pepper and just doused it on the wound, and instantly the blood stopped flowing. I thought I was going to end up having to go to the hospital for stitches. Didn't work out that way. It's healing very nicely, and also Kion is a very great disinfectant, and it can save someone's life in the event of a heart attack. Give them Kion Pepper Tea, and usually they'll be around before the ambulance gets to the house. Thank you.
Hmm. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Just to add context to what the gentleman caller just said, within the same paragraph, and with this actually was in a lot of the other articles that I was pulling up about the story, her nickname was String Bean and Bean because she was so skinny. So he's right on target with, he obviously was a child, looked like a child, but the child caught his eye. So, yeah, just gross, really nasty stuff.
I could imagine, and for her not to say that was, like, she wasn't even turned off by that. Like, when Gus said, well, you know, when she met her, for 17 to 23, you know, I could see her trying to justify that. When I was 17, my 47 was, you know, I could see it, but 11 and 17, unjustifiable, like, any stretch of the imagination, and she didn't even seem turned off by that. And then she turned around and said, yeah, but if it was the other way around, yeah, I could imagine, I bet she would have been pissed off then. So, yeah, like Lot said, their culture is pedophilia. And I just wanted to add in, two police officers today were fired for posting racist stuff. And like they were, they're refining, they're making examples out of people so they can further refine their system. They're going to, start ridiculing people for sending out those things now. And I just find this is just being further refined. They're just teaching them, you can still be a racist, just don't put it online.
Oh, yeah, just had an addendum. Just in case anyone was wondering, the cayenne pepper did not burn. So it's not like it, set the wound on fire or anything. So in case anyone was wondering, it didn't burn at all. Thank you.
Was there someone else who was going to get in a comment? I thought I heard someone speak up simultaneously with Thomas. Was anybody else or folks satisfied? Everyone good? That's great, too. Everyone satisfied? Got in all their commentary? Awesome. Awesome. We'll be here again tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Workplace Racism. We'll be looking forward. Friday, Mr. Sam Greenlee, the spook who sat by the door, installment number 3. Lots of workplace racism in that as well coming up this week. Certainly we'll be here Saturday for the compensatory call in. I think, or at least if folks remember the book, it was mentioned, I think back in July, it's a book about workplace racism by a black female author. It's called Listen In. I played an audio segment about it, I think like in July, because it was right after the shooting in Baton Rouge. But she should be coming on the program later in October. I think they got me a copy of her book. So I am looking forward to seeing if she has some constructive ideas, concepts about workplace racism. She seemed excited about coming on the program. So that is something to look forward to down the road. I'm excited about that, as well as the black person who made the website. It got a lot of attention here in Washington State. The reparations website that she set up, where black people could list things that they need and whites can purchase or get them, whatever, if they put on there that they want or need. She should be coming on the program in a matter of weeks as well. So things on the horizon, future broadcasts. If you have guest suggestions or thoughts, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Incidentally, there are quite a few of those films coming out, not just The Loving Project. I think I mentioned it on one of the Global Sunday Talks on Racism, where there's a film coming out that's about it's a black male. He might be from the continent, and he ends up in some sort of tragic arrangement with a white woman from Europe someplace. And this took place, I think, in the 60s. This project is coming out next month as well. David Oyelowo, he is the black male, the main character in this role. This was, all of these films were at the Toronto Film Festival when Birth of a Nation was there. And so people were talking about all of these projects and some of the other films that are about to come out in the next few weeks or months with main characters being black people. But I think the sexual confusion is going to be a significant part of the conclusion of 2016 on a lot of the films that people are talking about and going to see and that might even get awards. I would not be surprised at all if The Loving Story ends up getting some sort of acclaim for an award or what have you. And again, just Gus included, that we should use this to make sure that there is some content that calls out the age discrepancy in this relationship and put that in context, because this is not a one-time thing. This is consistent. As I stated, Thomas Jefferson raping a child, Sally Hemings, I think Strom Thurmond, it was the same thing. Yes, he had a child with a black person, but she was a child. He was significant. It's about the same thing, about an 8-10 year age gap between the black female that he was raping, who worked, I believe, at his house, Senator, ultimately, Strom Thurmond. But just put that in context, that this is not a one-time thing. This is consistent. And I think even one of Daniel Holtzclaw's victims down in Oklahoma was a 17-year-old. So just point that out, that this is a pattern in the system of racism, white supremacy. It's not just the Loving case, them glorifying the rape and sexual terrorism of black children, ongoing in the system. Thanks, B. Moore. She didn't exactly recommend, but she did share the information for Kelly Freeman. Hope it was of some value in hearing from a pro-black, well-meaning white woman. Maybe if you want to contact her and see if you can at least get a free shirt out of the T-tail, feel free. Let us know what's on the shirt if you get one. Thanks for everyone tuning in. Glad hearing the exchange. I hope people that are listening to the archives that it was worth your time and energy. Again, we have way too many problems as black people to waste time. If you're not getting constructive information that is helping you clear up confusion about racism, white supremacy, so that you have an accurate understanding, helping you solve some problems, improving your quality of life in some way, directly or indirectly, then you should not be listening, because we just have too many problems to waste time as long as we are subject to racist man, racist woman, racist child. In the same vein, I will state again, one thing that we can do to work against white supremacy: make an effort. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. That includes alcohol, cigarettes, cannabis, everything. For us to be in our right mind, not using substances that are going to be addictive and have us craving things that we don't need, have us where we're not able to make the best possible decisions to help us keep ourselves safe, because it can be a life-ending, life-altering incident in a matter of seconds. You see that every day. You never know when you're going to bump into a Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, race soldier, badge or no, where the choices that you make in the next 20 seconds, 60 seconds could be the difference between you living or your life being extinguished immediately. Keep that in mind. Take it seriously. When we say racism, white supremacy is war, that's what it means. It is constant worldwide war against everybody classified as black, everybody who is non-white, all areas of people activity, and our behavior should reflect that at all times. In my view, that can be done best by being sober. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient under conditions of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white terrorism. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Yeah. I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.